half an hour earlier than normal, and that's because of the football at 5 o'clock. We are going to go and check out what's been happening in American sports. And Snowy, David Snow joins me as always. Snowy, of course, the Masters are on in Augusta, and you've got some interesting stats on that. But first of all, before we do that, we have to talk about a story that was huge when it happened in 1994 and became huge again this week, and that is the death of O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, good evening, John, and to everybody in Galway. Yes, the legacy of Orenthal James Simpson is really something. It's sort of like a tale of two lives. He had an outstanding professional football career in college at USC, won a Heisman Trophy, went on to an incredible NFL career. And I could rattle off statistics for you all day long. But for a few years in the mid-70s, he was a dominant player and one of the all-time greatest running backs, bar none. And still holds all these years later, 5 NFL records. He's tied for 2 others. Now, this is when they were playing 14 games a year and not 16 and then now 17 games a year. His records are unbelievable. And we can quickly put that aside. But in between the good and the really ugly, in the middle, he was beloved. He was charming. He was, handsome. He checked all the boxes to become just a mega star in the United States. I mean, you turned on the television, you were going to find O.J. Simpson. He was a commentator on sporting events post-career. He was on TV in miniseries as an actor. He was in movies, comedies, and disaster movies, The Towering Inferno, for one. And he did a lot of commercials. He was a spokesman for Hertz Rent-A-Car, and you saw him running through the airports, infamously. So I take you through that before we get to the ugly part you allude to, which is in the 90s, everything went off the rails. He was allegedly the murderer of his wife and her friend, could be boyfriend, but certainly was the only suspect that they ever went after. And it was pretty clear that he did it. But in a complicated racial dynamic in the 90s, there was a trial that went on. Some call it the trial of the century. There's been miniseries cast over it that set records for people watching. It starts, John, with the accusation. And as soon as he became the prime suspect, he went on a chase. Now, granted, it was a slow police chase, but I'm sure you remember it. And there was so much going on. And you will find people in this country today that will say, I know exactly where I was when that chase was going on. It was on a Friday evening, early in the evening. The NBA finals were on. All of the networks cut to watch this chase, the helicopter going over the Los Angeles freeways, this slow police chase. It was OJ and his friend and former teammate, Al Collings. And they were running along trying to figure out what they were going to do next. In theory, I think Collings was trying to get him to turn himself in. But OJ had a gun. He had gone missing. He appears in this white Bronco and the chase is on. And it goes on for a long period of time. 95 million people were watching this chase. You think about that, 95 million. And they were glued to the TV. He pulled into his own driveway. Al Collings pulled him in and put a gun to his head and was threatening to kill himself. And now the police are surrounding, and eventually he surrenders. Now you have this trial cutting to the chase. Anybody that was involved in this trial, judge, lawyer, prosecutor, all became big stars, if you will, oddly, because of this trial.
And oddly, Snowy, if you want someone to blame for the Kardashians on social media and all that goes with it, there's a very interesting side connection with all of this, because one of the lawyers that was defending him was a Mr. Kardashian.
Yeah, Robert Kardashian. That's right, John. And, famous attorneys, Alan Dershowitz, F. Lee Bailey, like all of these people were playing their role. And you draw the right, if you don't have this trial, if OJ doesn't allegedly, fingers in the air, kill his wife to be blunt about it, you never get to see Kim and Courtney and whoever the rest of them are, you know, running around with what formerly was Bruce Jenner. You know, it's a wild scene. But to get to the root of it, at the end, he was acquitted of the murder. And a lot of, you know, it fell along racial lines, how people felt about it. And right or wrong, the black community in the United States, many people in that community said, well, maybe once in a while it's good for us to get away with something because we've had years of injustice. So, and not to go down a too dark a road there, no pun intended. The years later, you know, he lives sort of a quiet life for a while after the acquittal, and then has to go through the civil trial process, owes the victims of his activities, alleged activities, hundreds of millions of dollars, never pays on them, ends up going to jail 9 years. He does 9 years in jail for armed robbery and kidnapping in a very complicated accusation. And so he does the time, gets out, ends up spending a few years of freedom. You'd see him pop out, be on Twitter, and people would tease the hell out of him. And then doesn't he get cancer and pass away this week at 76 years old? I mean, very complicated individual.
It is one of those rather incredible. And of course, you know, I mean, Johnny Cochran was his lawyer, and he's the one that's probably best known for being behind O.J. Simpson when the decision was made and the verdict came out. And even Lawrence Ito, who was the judge. And the only reason I know this is because when you see something like that getting sent up on a program like The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but I digress, actually, the main character in it, Philip, references the judge in it, which was incredibly funny for all sorts of reasons. But, you know, but I mean, it was his record as an American footballer that people do, I mean, they will remember him for so many, many different things. And it kind of closes the door on that story, if I can, you know, do that, even though some will believe that's not the case. That's, you know, O.J. Simpson had to talk about that because that was box office in the States during the week in a sporting and a news sense. Back to sport, though, Snowy, and we have got a golfing tournament that is just, which I adore. There's something about the Masters that's just so, so special. And we've been updating throughout the afternoon how the two Irish lads are getting on. But it's just the whole story of the Masters is a very, very unique one.
It is. And I think they really play to that uniqueness. Even the casual fan, a sports fan or even a golf fan, if you're a novice, there's something about the way that it's broadcast, the way that it's presented. There is a true uniqueness to it that they're able to hold on to. And in doing a little bit of research around the Masters, I know you'd be the expert on the actual play and you know, the leaderboard and things like this. If you don't mind, I just want to like run a couple of things by you, a couple of facts about the Masters. The number one, if you're a media person, they give you a badge. They have little tags inside every badge so they know exactly where everyone is at all times. The every player that plays, regardless of when you get cut, the minimum you will walk away with is $10,000, which is great. For the people that live outside of Augusta National, they can rent their homes for anywhere from $30,000 and up for the week. And brands will often pay up to six figures for the larger homes in the area where they can host their events. And there's a special IRS exemption in the tax code over here called the Augusta Rule that allows those homeowners to rent out their homes for 2 weeks without paying any taxes on that income. These are things, and so it's really something. But when you get into what makes it unique, they only sell their merchandise during that week. You can't get it anywhere else. You can't buy it online. The authentic Masters stuff. And they do $10 million a day, $70 million in that week, just selling merchandise. And it's the exclusivity of it that drives it, you know? So it's so popular, and it's the only place you can buy it. Just to give you a couple more quick little facts about it, the concession stand food is wrapped in green packaging so it can't be seen if it ends up flying out by breeze onto the TV, you know, out onto the course. So the TV never has to worry about a big white napkin flying across the screen. And here's one for you. Somebody found one of the Masters Champions green jackets in a Canadian thrift store. They purchased it for $5 and it later sold at an auction for $140,000. And so on and on it goes. Here's the one, John, that as a member of the media, as you are, you'll find this to be really something. The Masters, they leave millions of dollars on the table because they give the broadcasting rights away to ESPN and CBS over here. Totally free, but they do it so they can maintain complete control. They pick the advertisers, they get rid of on-course signage, and only play 3 to 4 minutes of commercials every hour. It's just a really, really, as you alluded to, such a unique event. And 1,500 private jets end up landing in Augusta during the week, and they pay $3,000 per to land and park for the week.
It's incredible. And as well as that, by the way, for anybody who is a fan of watching the Masters on TV, or just check it out on YouTube, actually, in the days when CBS coverage used to be basically everywhere, the music is just so unique as well. You don't hear it anywhere else at any other stage of the year except during the Masters, which I suppose is what makes it so special. Snowy, Monday night is the WNBA draft, and this is... I was looking somewhere that it's a 7 p.m. so it'll be about 1 a.m., 2 a.m. when it, you know, it starts over here, if it's being broadcast at all. But this is what people have been talking about since the Final Four, since the National Championship. This is now what they're talking about, and the professional clubs are just wetting their lips. They can't wait to get their hands on these players.
And no question. And in coming out of a tournament that just saw record numbers of people glued to their televisions during the tournament, the women's tournament. I mean, in a way that it's just inconceivable. You know, if you told me 3 years ago that it would outdraw the men's tournament television wise, I would have told you were crazy. I mean, the growth of the game is just, it's on a rocket ship, and it continues to do so. And so the Indiana Fever, it's with my Boston accent. The Fever, they have the number one pick, and everyone believes it will be Caitlin Clark, and what a draw that will be. The league in their network package has already put like 30 of those Indiana Fever games right into the rotation to show nationally, because they know that the Caitlin Clark Fever will be there. So it's really... these are interesting and, you know, cutting a new path for women's basketball. It's really fascinating.
Can I ask you, actually, Snowy, someone asked me this question, so I thought I was going to ask you, and I could see where they were coming from. Caitlin Clark playing professional, is this something akin to when Magic Johnson started playing with the Lakers? That it has that kind of, that incredible connection with people, that they get so excited about somebody that, like when Magic Johnson left college, or Michael Jordan, probably the better example, when they left college to play basketball professionally, you know, they almost dragged a whole country with them, looking forward to watching them play. And it's the same with Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, I think it's a fair comparison. I hadn't really thought about that, but it's the right one. I mean, Magic and Larry Bird came out in 1979, right? Together, they played in the national title game. That when they came out, that is when the NBA really got its act together and it took off, right? And it cut the path for Michael Jordan. And Jordan just took it to another level, right? But when you come back to that draft in 79, Bird had already been drafted. Back then, they could draft you as an underclassman. So Red Auerbach from the Celtics grabbed Bird a year before, grabbed his rights, and Magic was then the first pick in 1979. And yeah, from that point on, those two transformed the league, made it must-see television. I think you're dealing in the same space here. You've got, it isn't just Caitlin Clark, but the eyes on that league continue on the WNBA, just continue to grow. The numbers, you'll bear it out. She is the cherry on top right now. That if she goes to the Indiana Fever, gets off to a good start, that will become appointment television, particularly in the middle of the country.
Yeah, speaking of Indiana, of course, that's Larry Bird's home country, home neck of the woods, isn't it? I think he go to college in Indiana. So
he's the hick from French Lick.
Yeah, so, I mean, there you go. I mean, talk about history repeating itself. Now, I want to, actually, speaking of which, I want to go to ice hockey because there's a 17-year-old you were telling me about who is going to be first pick in the draft. Now, this is very, very unheard of to have someone that young being so keenly wanted in ice hockey. Usually, you've got to be about 4 or 5 years older before you get a look in like that. This is a big story.
It's an incredible story. Not since Wayne Gretzky, in my opinion, are you seeing somebody at that age who's ready. You know, that he could play in the NHL tonight. I had the great fortune to watch. His name is Macklin Celebrini. He's just 6 foot, about 200 pounds, and he's still growing, but just plays like an adult. He carries himself like an adult. His dad actually worked for the Vancouver Canucks and also the Golden State Warriors, and also within soccer with the Vancouver Whitecaps. He definitely in the training the health aspect to players and training and all the kinesiology, all that stuff. So Macklin and his brother Aiden have been around professional athletes their whole life. Macklin gets texts from Kevin Durant and Steph Curry after games. So this is a special kid. I mean, nothing phases him. And just an immense talent. He'll step right in. Whether he decides to come back to college for one more year, he possibly could. I just can't imagine. I think the money is going to be too much to step away from. And, you know, depending on what team drafts him, they're going to want him next day. So special stuff. He won the equivalent of the Heisman Trophy for the best collegiate hockey player last night at 17 years old. That is called the Hobey Baker Award, and it's a big deal in college hockey circles.
Okay, and how about the Frozen Four? What's the situation with that?
So the final is tonight. In the semifinals, Denver, University of Denver, knocked off Boston University in overtime, 2-1 in one semifinal. And then Boston College, who's been number one most of the season, they made short work of the University of Michigan in winning 4-0. Denver and Boston College will meet tonight with the title on the line. They did meet early in the season back in October. Denver had a 3-2 victory at Boston College. Means nothing tonight. It'll start nothing. Two teams playing on a sheet of ice, and truly anything can happen. Goaltenders will decide that one tonight.
So that's where you're going to be tonight, basically glued to the TV, the TV watching it. Snowy, look, have a great Saturday evening, and enjoy the hockey tonight, and really appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
John, thanks for everything, and go you Galway United women's team. Get behind this club. They're doing some amazing things. Coach Phil Trill doing some fantastic work. Now we need to get people in the seats.